Good morning. Open your Bibles to 2 Kings 13. 2 Kings 13. Caleb is going to read our main verse, 2 Kings 13, 14 through 19. Some others. Trevor's going to read 2 Kings 13, verse 15. Tony, 2 Kings 13, 16. Jake, 2 Kings 13, 16. That's the second time. And Josh, read 2 Kings 13, verse 17. And we have Brian, 2 Kings 13, 18. And Johnny, 2 Kings 13, 19. This is a continuation. We just have two more lessons, this one, and one more. We'll finish our series. We've been looking at Elisha concerning leadership. And so this is actually the last lesson of Elisha's life while he was living. We actually have one more story next time. That'll be after he's dead. He's still teaching. Okay, 2 Kings 13. So in World War II, there's a great story that illustrates what we're going to talk about today. And in World War II, in the Battle of Normandy, Brigadier General Norman Cota, he came across some soldiers. American soldiers were lying on the ground, pinned down outside a farmhouse, and Germans were shooting at them, and he asked them, "Why aren't you doing anything about the Germans in there?" And they said, "We're getting shot at." And he said, "Okay, I tell you what, you start shooting at them and I'll show you what to do." So they started shooting at the farmhouse. He and his men yelled, ran at the farmhouse, threw grenades through the windows, kicked open the door, shot everybody. And then they came out, and he asked the question. He said, "Do you understand now how you're supposed to do it?" And they said, "Yes." And he said, "Good, because I won't be around to do it for you anymore. You've got to do it for yourself." So that's a great lesson of leadership. And in any level of leadership, you have to be able to instruct others how to have victory. And that is on every level of life. So in the story of the shooting of the arrows, we see here, these are arrows of development. 2 Kings 13, 14 through 19.
"Now when Elisha had fallen sick with the illness of which he was to die, Joash, king of Israel, went down to him and wept before him, crying, 'My father, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen.' And Elisha said to him, 'Take a bow and arrows.' So he took a bow and arrows. Then he said to the king of Israel, 'Draw the bow,' and he drew it. And Elisha laid his hands on the king's hands, and he said, 'Open the window eastward,' and he opened it. And Elisha said, 'Shoot,' and he shot. And he said, 'The Lord's arrow of victory, the arrow of victory over Syria. For you shall fight the Syrians in Aphek until you have made an end of them.' And he said, 'Take the arrows,' and he took them. And he said to the king of Israel, 'Strike the ground with them.' And he struck three times and stopped. Then the man of God was angry with him and said, 'You should have struck five or six times. Then you would have struck down Syria until you had made an end of it. But now you will strike down Syria only three times.'"
Okay, arrows of development. We're going to look at three arrows that are involved in training and leadership. Number one is the arrow of instruction. So there can be a mistake made, and that is a failure to communicate or to instruct. If you are working with people on any level, some people are not, they simply don't instruct the people they're working with in what to do. So why would you not do that? Of course, sometimes people don't instruct because they hope people know what to do. And they just kind of, you know, there's a kind of a big picture, we got to get some things done, and they just sort of hope that people will work it out for themselves. I am very interested. One of the reasons why we have breakfast In the mornings, we spend a fortune on food that I never eat. I'm not interested in eating breakfast here. But the reason why we do that is that's just one way to create a venue where people can ask questions, because questions are good for the person who asks them, but questions actually help me. I'm very interested in what people don't know. So you got to imagine, I have been... I've been saved since 1978. That's how long I've been a Christian. So I've been saved that long. I've been pastoring since 1986, and so I've been pastoring a long time. So there are stuff that I know, and I assume that others know. Questions actually help me when I realize what people don't know. I don't resent them for not knowing it. It actually helps me. It's like, oh, then I need to be able to instruct that. So if I simply just hope that people know what to do, that's not going to work. Or if you just simply expect that people will do right. We do have men that I know that they have the attitude, I had to work things out for myself, and you will too. And I'm before I was a pastor, I did an apprenticeship in glazing, working with glass. And so I worked with a couple of guys, and their attitude was, we had to work it out for ourselves. We're not going to tell this young punk anything, because he should be able to work it out for himself. That was their attitude. Fortunately, I had a boss that had a brain and realized if I didn't know what I was doing, I was costing him money. So he did teach me. So, in fact, In our fellowship, we don't believe in Bible school. We're gonna launch three workers tonight, none of which have gone to formal Bible school. We have taught them hands-on. We have taught them personally in classes like this, one-on-one, in different dimensions. So because we don't believe it's biblical to send somebody to a school to become a pastor, that doesn't mean, however, that we don't instruct. So that's a key balance. And some guys, it's almost like, I had to work it out for myself, you work it out for yourself. And I don't think that is correct. This scripture here shows us that leadership involves clear communication of values. And that is important. Did I give somebody verse 15? Hi, yeah, go ahead.
And Elijah said to him, take a bow and some arrows. So he took himself a bow and some arrows.
Okay, so... he didn't just simply say, you know what, we got to fight the enemy, work it out. There's something very practical. Take a bow and some arrows. So instruction involves a number of things. Number one, it involves showing people how to get things done. That's very practical. How do you do things? Some of the guys that when they begin working in the concert, I work with them personally. I literally say and teach them, this is what is involved in a concert altar call. This is how you raise your voice. This is the appropriate level in which to preach. That's very practical. I don't just hope that they get that. I show them practically getting things done. And that's true in a larger sense. So here's the key. There will occasionally be people who are very clever and work things out for themselves. They are rare. It's very rare to have somebody, they just naturally pick things up and do it by themselves. Most people, they can do it if they're shown. And there's things that don't occur to them. So getting things done, you instruct that. That's what he's doing here. Take a bow and arrows. I'm going to show you how. Then there's larger consequences. This is important. In instruction, some of the things are not literally how do you write this, how do you put it together, how do you say that. Some of the things are larger consequence, that there are things we do right now that the full importance might not be seen. I had someone who called yesterday, and their question was, churches with electronic social media and different kinds of things, and it's like, wow, they had an idea. We can get our message out. Why don't we just put our sermons all on the internet? and do all that. And number one, because I would never be able to preach anywhere. I would arrive in town and they go, yeah, we heard that. But apart from that, there's bigger picture issues that I don't have time to go into all today. But the point was, is that I was helping him to look, what you do today is not the only issue. Shooting the arrows, this was more than an archery lesson. This had a bigger picture, and so larger consequences, that needs to be shown. And then big picture is, what is the ultimate goal? That is the important issue. Often, when I have guys on staff and I'm telling them what to do, I explain that if I tell you to do something, it's not only because I want it done, it is because I'm training you for the future. Someday I will give you an instruction that will literally be people's lives. It will literally be whether or not a church survives. I had a man one time, he never kept in contact with me for 10 years. He was out in ministry, called me twice, never asked a question. Finally, in a crisis, he called me on a Saturday evening and said, explain, there's a guy and he's causing big problems. And I said to him, that you have to deal with this man. He's going to hurt your church. And I said, go right now when you hang up. Well, I'll talk to him tomorrow. I said, don't do it. I gave him the instruction that my pastor gave years ago. Why do you want to have a big confrontation with this man in front of everybody? He'll make a scene. His wife will cry. And everybody will then feel sympathy for him, even though he's being a jerk. I said, go to his house right now. But the problem is, he didn't listen to me. He didn't like conflict. He didn't listen to me. The next morning, he has a big, hairy confrontation with the guy. The guy starts screaming and yelling in front of everybody in church. He was the drummer, and the guy went up right at church time and grabbed his drum set and walked out of the church. He lost his whole church. The whole church. It wasn't long after that he called me and said, there's no one left. I got one guy left. That's all that's left out of the whole church. So that's the point. So that's why when I'm giving instructions, I'm training guys. This doesn't have to do with advertising or microphone cords. It has to do with the future. You have to learn how to follow instructions, because someday the instructions will literally be people's lives. That's an important lesson. So, the first thing that has to happen, you need to be able to give instruction. Number two, there's the arrow of impartation. Leadership has to be more than instruction. Again, we do not believe that you can become a pastor by going to school. That's not biblical. Because information is not enough. The Jews had schools. They had scripture schools. They had Bible schools, if you will. But that's not the method that Jesus used, because he said that's not enough. If it was simply information, I could write it all down. I could hand you a book. You could read that and go, give me a test. I'm ready. But that's not enough. That is not what leadership involves. It involves a personal connection. 2 Kings 13:16.
Then he said to the king of Israel, put your hand on the bow. So he put his hand on it, and Elijah put his hand on the king's hand.
Okay. Put your hand on the bow, and Elisha put his hands on the king's hand. So this is an important part of leadership. There has to be connection. If you don't make connection with someone who knows more than you, you're the fool. Because you can't. Hey, just send me an email. Text it to me. You're not going to get it. There has to be personal connection. So think about this. Elisha is available. He's on his deathbed. Probably I'd say if you're dying, you've got a few things on your mind. And the king shows up. Hey, what about the future? And he says, go get a bow and arrow. And he puts his hand on here. So that's availability. There's accessibility. We've had men that from time to time they come from other churches. I'm very interested in hearing what lessons they learn in our church. And one guy said, anyone can ask you anything here. That stood out to him. That we make we create an atmosphere. I remember very clearly when Justin Manzanares, when he first switched on more than just coming to church, he began to have a hunger. So I encourage guys to ask me Bible questions. And so I don't know if you understand, in my position, I don't just deal with church issues. My position is people shovel up problems they can't solve. They go up the chain and then they bring. So by the time I come to church, I may be dealing with worldwide fires. And so I come, and Justin, I remember very clearly that right at that time I was going through some very intense, there were some huge hot potatoes that I was dealing with. And in the middle of that, Justin would stop me, Pastor, what does this mean in John? And honestly, there would be times when I'm thinking, I have bigger issues than explaining what's going on in John chapter 5. But I never did that. Because that is how you raise disciples. And that's fine. No, it doesn't matter what's going on. I want you to ask me questions. Because that's an important part. That's a availability. So in large part, you're never going to be effective in people unless, with leadership of any kind, unless your attitude is, I am here for you, you're not here for me. That's an important distinction. I think somebody asked that at breakfast the other morning. They were talking about Pastor Mitchell and the old statement he made in the 70s, is your church your field or your force? That is what Pastor Mitchell was talking about, is do you view the people who are under you on the job, the people who are under you in a ministry or in a church, do you think these people are here for me? You're here to, I had a pastor one time, his idea of discipleship was, you wash my car, you vacuum this, you work for, you do my stuff. That's not how we operate here. Pastor Mitchell has never done that. So leadership is actually, here Elisha, he's dying, but his attitude was, I'm here for you. How can I help you in your destiny? I'm not talking about, hey, Pastor, can you come mow my lawn? No. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about in general is I'm trying to help you with your destiny. Spirit, here's the second thing. Verse 16, the second time.
Then he said to the king of Israel, put your hand on the bow. So he put his hand on it, and Elisha put his hand on the bow.
Okay, so what's interesting here, in his final lesson, is Elisha is training him, how do you look? They had a big problem. The problem was the Syrians. Okay, most of you, you're not dealing with Syrians. But you are dealing with financial problems. You're dealing with sickness, barrenness, conflicts, people that are vexed, all kinds of things. So what he's doing here, he gets off his deathbed, puts his hands here. He's actually showing him there is a spirit. So what do we do? So in other words, the king, you know what the king did? The king is coming and being sentimental. So he's looking at Elisha who's dying and, alas, the chariot of Israel. He's being sentimental. In other words, we got problems and you're dying. Isn't life tough? And Elisha says, go get a bow. Get some arrows. So, in other words, it's a spirit that he's trying to put into him. So, how do you look at life, and especially, how do you look at problems? That is a powerful leadership lesson. Are you the kind who, oh man, it's so hard, I want to do the will of God, but then something broke and I got sick and I lost my job and so it's just too hard? Then you're going to struggle. That's what you're going to put in people. They're going to go, yeah, that, what a great idea. Oh, I can't do it. No, that's Elisha. Get a bow and arrows. What do we do when faced with a problem? We fight. This is the lesson that I put into young men is, this is unacceptable. I'm not going to put up with this. So I preached on being born again on Wednesday, and you could tell I was worked up about this. Why? Because it's not acceptable that we have a church of people that are not born again. That's a way of looking at life. It's more than just, I want to get some people saved. I'm teaching you something. We have to have conversions. You have to go for it to get people saved. That's a way of looking at life. That's an important part. That's spirit. How do you look at problems? And there's passion. Verse 17.
And he said, open the east window. And he opened it. And then Elijah said, shoot, shot. And he said, the arrow of the Lord's deliverance and the arrow of deliverance from Syria, for the most strikes the Syrians at Apak till you have destroyed them.
Okay, so so open the window and shoot. The problem sometimes if you're reading in the King James, New King James, is it sounds very bland. It sounds very tech. No, open the window. If it was in King James, open the window and shoot. No, that is not. Is what you have to understand here. This is open the window. Shoot the arrow. The Lord's delivering. We have to deal with the Syrians. So there's passion. In other words, what is it that stirs your blood? And would anybody know? What is it that gets you excited in life? And would anybody know about it? Is it only sport? Do you only come alive when people are talking about sports or cars or computers or something else? This was of the highest importance, defeating the enemy. We have to do that. People have needs. They're being oppressed. This is the arrow of the Lord's deliverance. People need to be delivered from sin and sickness and oppression. So you do that by words. When you speak to people, by personal conversations, by preaching, you do that by actions, the things that you do. So there's impartation. The final arrow is the arrow of testing. So training, if you're going to train people, there has to be tests. Now I'm not talking about book tests. Once you have shown someone what to do, you have to find out what is in them. You have to find out, number one, do they get it? But two, you have to find out what they're made of. And so Elisha deliberately arranges a test. That's found in verse 18.
Then he said, take the arrows, and the king took them. Elisha told him, strike the ground, and he struck it three times and stopped.
Okay, so the first part was, get a bow and arrow, put his hands, this is what you do. But now he takes his hands off and he says, shoot some arrows, strike the ground. So this is actually a test. You're going to do this for yourself now. My hands were on you. I showed you what to do. Now you shoot some arrows. So this is a test. There are elements of testing. So there are things that you deliberately don't explain all of the consequences. And that is valid. I first said you instruct. But then there are things in life you don't explain the full consequences. So what's interesting to me is Elisha didn't say, look, you got to shoot some arrows, and God is watching your heart. He wants to see your passion, so shoot until you run out of arrows, man, a minimum five or six. He doesn't do that. In other words, what he wants to know is, what's inside of you? Let me see you shoot. So what's clear is the guy, he's not into it. Are we done yet? That's a test. That's very important. When I was in South Africa, their money at one point was 14 to 1. So, you know, things were, in U.S. dollars, were incredibly cheap. So we'd be working on the building, or there'd be something that we would need. And so I'd have to send somebody. So I knew what things cost. They didn't have cars. I'd have to send them on a taxi and have to go get something. So, knowing how much something cost in Africa, financial integrity, you want to know whether somebody is a thief. So I would deliberately give them more money than they needed, and I wouldn't ask for it back. I wanted to know if they would give me the change. Now, the change to me, it didn't change my life, it didn't change the church in any way. So there'd be guys at 14 to 1, they're bringing me back change that is cents. You know, they're bringing back 50 cents worth of American dollars. It's not going to change my life if I get 50 cents back, but it's going to change theirs. I needed to know whether I could trust them financially. And there'd be guys that wouldn't come and give me the change, and then I'd ask them later on, hey, where's the change? Because money's important. But I first would not ask because I wanted to know what was in their heart. That's a test. I didn't say, look, I'm giving you more than you need, and I'm going to watch whether I get the change. I didn't explain that. Because a test sometimes is not explained. Secondly, you have to leave people to themselves. There is an element, if you have clearly instructed people, there is also the element that you can't, first of all, put his hands on his hands, but then it's hands off. You do the shooting. I put this together at conferences. Micah Wright, he reminded when he was concert director, he came one night and right at the end, during the altar call, I don't know, 20 people came in, and he said to me, Pastor Greg, a whole bunch of visitors just walked in. He said, do you think that we should do another short set and pull another altar call? The answer is, of course, stupid. Why do you think we're here? But that's not what I said to him. My answer was, you're in charge. And I didn't give an opinion either way. And fortunately, Micah made the right choice. He wanted me to make the choice for him. But a test, see, is it's hands off sometimes. So Micah said, we're going to do another. And I don't remember, a bunch of people got saved. Then I said, Micah, that was very good. That's great. That's thinking. That's an important part. So you can't micromanage men into leadership. If you're going to watch over all the time, it's simply do the math. I don't have time to micromanage everybody. I can't run your life and mine too. If I got to run your life every second of the day, if I tell you to do something and then I got to check up 50 times where that gets done, you're making me tired, man. My job's hard enough. So you can't micromanage. Now, the danger, of course, of letting people have freedom to try and to do things on their own is they might not do it right. That's the downside, see? So, if I say, do this, do that, no, right there, yeah, it might get done better, but they're not learning. They're not developing. So you have to lead people to themselves. And finally then, you have to follow up and apply the lesson. Final verse, verse 19.
The man of God was angry with him. He said, you should have struck 5 or 6 times. And then you would have struck Syria till you had destroyed it. But now you will strike Syria only 3 times.
Okay, so now he follows up. I leave you to do the shooting, but now he's saying, why did you only shoot 3? There's something wrong here. Should have shot 5 or 6. The bigger picture, it's about Syria. It's about deliverance. So that's an important part. When you instruct someone, when you leave them to their own devices, hands off, you don't just simply stay hands off, then you follow up with application. How do you think that went? So that was good. When Micah did that, then I followed up afterwards with a conversation. So, what's the lesson that you learned there? If we're here to get people saved, flexibility. What can you do to get people saved? That's our point. It's not a rigid program. It is, we're here to get people saved. So you work that out. How do you think that worked out? Sometimes I ask people the simple question. If they do something and I've allowed them to do it, I ask them, why did you do it like that? And the question sometimes is, I don't know. Well, that's not a good enough answer. You got to follow up. That's an important part. So, those are leadership lessons. That's how you develop people on any level. Okay, let's open for questions. Something that brings up. Vince.
So, when he's saying strike the ground, he's saying shoot some more arrows.
Well, strike the ground was, he didn't specify. But what he clearly had indicated that this is about the arrow of the Lord's deliverance. So in other words, we're talking about getting free from the Syrians. So no, he didn't explain.
I was thinking it was, here, take some of these and bang them on the ground.
No, not bang, shoot. Shoot them into the ground. The first one was shoot them out the window. Now shoot them in the ground. Yeah.
So,
Eli.
The idea of having a fighting attitude
and
going after something when you have a problem and attacking it, that seems to me, when I think about it, to be very practical. Just, you're not going to solve anything by complaining, yet there's definitely something in human nature. Why is it that people do something so impractical as to do nothing when they're in trouble? Do you know what I mean? What causes that in our personality?
I don't know. That can vary with each person. One person it might be because they've been disappointed. Another person, they've just been raised to be a quitter. So, I don't know. I mean, there can be 100 reasons why people don't react, but the point is to teach people to fight. That's an important lesson. So, that's why in discipleship that things often go wrong, and that's not a bad thing, because that is pastoring. There are things that are not right. What are you going to do about it? So that's a life lesson, and that's why you hear me. It's almost a joke how many times I've said that is not acceptable. That's a spirit. I'm putting something into people. That's the way that you look at life. That's what my pastor taught me. Something goes wrong, I don't go, oh man, it's so unfair. Some people are taught to look at life as a victim, right? It's unfair, man. I want to do something for God, but,
That being a huge portion of people, how do you change it? Is it just a deliverance? God has to get involved in it?
Yeah, preaching, personal conversations, prayer, challenging, all the things we're saying here. Yeah, but they got to catch it for themselves. I can't make people be fighters. If you're like Michael Jackson, if you're a lover and not a fighter, I can't help you.
You said to impart the spirit of fighting,
uh-huh.
And you said you do it by words, preaching, and action. How would you do that by action?
Well, it's what I, there are a lot of different ways. So, there have been times where there's been a resistance in altar calls, or we haven't had people save her a little bit. At times I've brought you into the church and we've prayed at the altar. We've prayed in the church. I could do that in the prayer room. I'm giving you a visible lesson. When I first got here years ago and we weren't getting anybody saved in the concert, or the visitors weren't staying. So I took the guys down to the old underground building. And we laid hands on the drums. We laid hands on the whole building, every chair. We could do that from here. But I'm giving a visible... This is what we do. It's not acceptable that we have outreaches and people don't get saved. I'm not going to live with that. I'm not putting up with that. That's not the way I was raised. So I'm giving people visible instructions. So that's just one. Trevor?
What is the balance of putting your hands on to, let's say, their ministry or something? Because like you said, you have to pull off sometimes. What is the balance of keeping your hands on?
Well, exactly what I said is you give the clear instruction and then you allow them the ability to try by themselves, which may involve even the ability to fail, which is also acceptable. Failure to me is not a total loss. you're free to try. I don't know whether it'll work out. I get guys, hey, I got this outreach idea. You know, to me, I don't know that anybody's interested in that, but we try it. I'm willing to try. Even if it doesn't work, I'd rather have a guy, you know, we have a saying, successful men are button pushers. In other words, I can't give you one, say, look, if you do this, this, and this, you will succeed in life. So I give you, you know, because I have a logical mind, you'll notice my points are 1, 2, and 3, all, you know, neatly numbered, but life is not neatly numbered. I don't know, you try to, so what do you see is you see guys that they're pushing buttons, man. They're just like, yeah, that one didn't work, that one sucked, let's try this one, you know. That's life. So I instruct, I'm very much, I teach people the word, I teach them how to preach, I teach them, and then I say, you go for it. I don't know whether it'll work. I got a call yesterday. A guy called. He said, I want to ask something. Is it acceptable to our healing crusades part of discipleship? And I'm like, I don't get what's the context of the question. Why are you asking this? And he said, because our pastor, he's letting young guys do crusades, healing crusades. He goes, now I know Pastor Mitchell does healing crusades, but he's letting young guys in the church do healing crusades. And I said, of course that's discipleship. Absolutely. So, now, will they do it the best? I could do it better, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here to raise up warriors. I'm teaching men. So, that you have to deliberately instruct, you have to deliberately have hands off, and then you have to deliberately apply the lessons. What'd you learn? You know, so that's, you have to have, you deliberately build balance. That is a very deliberate. If I have instructed, it's now appropriate for me to let the guy have some space. If I've not instructed, then what he needs is instruction. It's not fair of me to say, yeah, go for it. I haven't taught you anything. Why did you do a bad job? Because I didn't teach you anything. That would be unfair. So, but if I've instructed, now it's up to you. You do something with it. Deliver. Who had a hand? Vince?
In our setting, we try stuff and then if we mess it up, we get another chance. Kind of a thing. It's like, here, this is what you did wrong, do it right better. Or you
sure.
Next time. But in this story, it seems like the next verse is, and then the lady died.
Yeah. And then he died. That's it. Well, personally, if you do it wrong, Vince, if one of us has to die, I'm hoping it's not me.
It doesn't seem like the king had a chance to repent.
Yeah, so, this king had other issues, so that's the part. This wasn't like just a, you know, the tightrope, you do made one mistake and that's it, you are finished for life. So, he had other issues. So, sometimes you have extreme... things happen in the Bible that are extreme because God is making a point. He's giving us the lesson. So I can't, you know, how come this guy didn't get another chance? He had other issues. I don't know. I'm not in charge. All I know is what we should do. Yeah. Pay attention or you might die, Vince. But I don't know. But don't feel pressure. Don't feel pressure in any way. Somebody else?
You're very aware of what's going on in the congregation, so how do we... have that same, I don't know if it's ability or whatever, focus, because things don't get past you like, you know, younger pastors, or I mean, sometimes you hear things are going on in a church and you wonder, how could that happen, you know, but you seem to have, and I want to have that too, so what things could you point out to really have that spiritual temperature of people and stuff in the congregation? To know where people are at, you know, and what's coming in.
Listening devices, you mean? No.
like the Hebrew roots thing. You knew that was making an inroad in the church, and so...
Yeah, so that's, you know, if I was to say what I pray for more than anything else, it's wisdom. Various versions. That's my biggest prayer, is God, you have to help me. I need to know. I pray over scriptures like the one in Isaiah. Awaken my ear. So let me hear. Let me know. Let me sense. So those are things that are instinctive. I can give instructions. I can't teach instincts. They have to They're either in you or they're not, but that's a personal issue. So if you're saying you want it, you cry out to God for it. So I stumble in. Things like Hebrew roots was something I stumbled into. It's just something personally that I read Christian publications. A lot of it is just to find stuff that irritates me. What's going on in the church world? So I do see trends. So when I see advertising and articles, I see this is a push, this is a trend. And that was something that just bugged me is white Americans dressing up like Jews and blowing rams on you. And I was like, that's stupid. And what's up with that? So I began to investigate it. So lo and behold, I didn't realize how big of a deal it was. I was actually just looking for something. I was thinking I'm going to do this for a few weeks. But as I dug into it, we went on for a long time. But yeah, so anyway, the answer, Ken, is you pray. That's mostly you sense things. You feel things in the spirit. I'm not a reactive preacher. In other words, I don't just go around, hey, Ken, are there any problems in the church? What do you hear? There's people gossiping? Right, I'm going to preach on gossip. I don't do that. But in prayer, I feel things. Or vague conversations, there's something that God will begin to deal with me. Or I will sense something by what's happening in the church or not happening in the church that then I respond to spiritually and discover that really met a need. So, I don't know. I ask God for help. I need lots of it.
In the area of discipleship, do you consider guide learning styles in order to maybe adapt your discipling to their...
Yeah. Blessed are you, Simon Barjona. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you. To you. So in other words, one of the implicit lessons there is the other 11, they don't get it yet. You see this, they don't. And that's okay. So yes, that's... I instruct in a setting like this that is generic, right? While teaching, I don't say, Trevor, don't listen. This is not for you. This is for Matt, right? So I throw things out generally. People are catching it at different levels. Now, when I work with a guy personally, I quickly discover their temperament, their intelligence, their background, you know. So there are some guys that for instance, they're filled with pride. So what they need, they don't need a back massage. What they need is hey, don't be stupid. Don't ever do that again. But I don't do that to every single person. There's another guy, he's limping along. I'm encouraging him. You can do it, bro. Come on, man. I'm not getting in his face because that would overwhelm him. So yes, you do adapt, but that's on a personal level. It's not on a general level. Somebody else? Yep.
Most of the time when I'm going out and I'm witnessing people, I run into some really crazy people, and I feel stirred to push in more, but I feel like they're gonna like bite me or something, like physically. How do you find the balance to that? Like, still pushing in but not getting beat up, I guess.
Just ask them, hey, before I say this, again, Josh, the Holy Spirit is the Spirit of truth. He will guide you into all truth. So this comes back to Ken's question, is that unfortunately there is no app. That's my joke. I'm working on the app for that. This is the witnessing beat-up app. Right? Okay, big guy. No, okay, don't. I can't. But you do sense. There are times in which the wisest course is let it go. I think the big thing, Josh, is it about your ego or is it about wanting them, you're wanting it for them? I was witnessing with a guy and literally he would take it personally when people wouldn't let him talk to them or wouldn't receive a flyer. So then in pride, this is literally what he said. Yeah, well, hell's hot, pal. So witnessing to him, that was about his ego. That wasn't about them. Right? So my point is, when you're asking God for sensitivity, there are times in which I just feel, let it go, man. Don't carry on. But, and then there are other times it's like, I know they said they don't want to hear it, but I just feel and I push a little bit. So, but I can't. I can't give you this, you know, look for when their fist goes back. All right, wait. You know, it's something you have to sense. And, yeah. The whole point of asking God is, don't you think that God is the one who tells us to do this in the first place? So don't you think He wants to help you to do it well? So if you ask, that's how I feel. God wants me to do His will. It's His will, not mine. So if I ask Him to help me do His will, He's likely to help me. And that's what I discover. Anybody else? All right. Well, here we are on launching day. Three guys. This is their last one. And then they're off into their destiny with God. So, hope you guys ask questions. We're believing God. He's going to help us. Okay.